little bit about what we know about the geology of the moon from the Apollo experience, but also address the issue of how well do we really know what we think we know. And to answer the question that I pose in my title, assuming my slide comes up, my answer is not very well. We don't understand the geologic style of the moon well enough, I think, to both identify the correct samples and to collect them when we do find them. So, first of all, let me just briefly review what the style, geologic style of the moon is. You probably all know this, but I want to make sure everyone in the room is up to speed on this. It is an airless, waterless body. It's been shaped primarily by two processes, magmatism that occurred a long time ago, and since then, bombardment by meteorites, by cosmic particles, and fundamentally it has ground up the surface into a very fine powder called the regolith. Now, there is bedrock on the moon, and we sort of know where it occurs. In the Maria, it's widely exposed. It's exposed by craters that dig down through the regolith and expose it. It's in rill walls, such as Hadley Rill, and it occurs along basically any natural outcrop, such as a graben wall. Highland bedrock, though, is very rare, and it's rare because the highlands are very old and the regolith is very thick, and therefore it takes a very large crater to penetrate this regolith and get down to the crystalline basement below. And in fact, it appears that only the very largest craters, the things that we call basins, are big enough to do this. Now, there are things called central peaks, which apparently bring up material from great depths. This is a picture of the crater Tycho, a Clementine mosaic, and you'll see from the false color mosaic that there's a variety of complex rock types exposed in the central peak. In addition, Copernicus shows the same thing. But a key question is, for a given lunar sample, where does it come from? That's point one. And secondly, if we see a regional unit, where do we go to sample it and make sure that we have sampled it? Now, the Apollo collection brought back about roughly 400 kilograms of rock and soil. Of the rocks, they break down to roughly 40% basalt, Mare basalt, 60% highland material. And there were very carefully devised field procedures on Apollo to document where the rocks came from. On Apollo 11, they didn't have enough time to do all this, but by the time we went back to the moon on Apollo 12, those were very carefully worked out. With the resulting fact is that we know where every sample in the Apollo collection came from on the moon. Not only that, we know its orientation. So we have very good knowledge of these samples, where they came from, what their orientation is. That's not the same as understanding what their geological context is. And that's because the regolith stirs things up and makes things chaotic and mixes things on a very large scale. Fundamentally, regolith formation is a disaggregation process. And in part, it's the grinding up of the surface rocks. There is a lithification process too, in that sometimes a small fraction of the crater, a crater ejector, will melt the target, and that will actually aggregate the materials. But you know that in fact that it's primarily a disaggregation process because the regolith thickness grows with time. The youngest units on the moon have the thinnest regoliths, and the oldest units have the thickest. In the lunar Maria, basically we have regoliths between 2 and 10 meters thick, and in the highlands it's usually much greater than 15 to 20. The sense of mixing is predominantly vertical, and that's what I want to convey to you, but sort of talk about the evidence for that in the next couple of slides. And fundamentally, it derives from the principal observation that there is more highlands in the Mare regolith than there is Mare debris in the highlands regolith, which suggests to me that, in fact, most of the mixing is coming from beneath the Mare flows. Remember, stratigraphically, the Mare lie on top of the highlands. So as you form regolith on this, occasionally you're going to dig beneath that Mare flow and bring up highland material from beneath. And that's the principal way highland material is added to Mare regolith. In contrast, you go to the highlands, you go to the Apollo 16 site, you don't see very much Maria. And you only see a few fragments that are brought by the rare lateral event, the rare transport. And in fact, this has been looked at in some detail, and it's been estimated that less than 1% of the material comes from distances greater than tens of kilometers from where you're sampling. The other line of evidence is that Mare highland boundaries are well preserved in the remote sensing data. These two images are both Clementine iron maps. The one down here has just been color stretched. But fundamentally, I want to call your attention to the contact between the highlands surrounding Mare Crisium and the Mare itself. It is very, very sharp. It's razor sharp. And that would not be preserved if there was a significant amount of material exchange between these two geologic units. Now, people do have pointed out that in some cases, such as the western edge of Tranquillitatis, there seems to be a much larger gradient of composition. But the actual fact is that sharp boundary is preserved where you have a nice highland-Mare contact. In fact, the reason for this gradation here is because these highlands in the western part of this image are actually more mafic than the highlands in the eastern part. So fundamentally, the remote sensing data support the idea that there's not much lateral transport, that it's mostly vertically mixed. So how do you best sample the moon? Well, there is a sort of if you don't have context to a sample, then it has limited scientific value. You need context because that tells you, when you make these very precise measurements on a sample, what you're actually measuring. We have lunar meteorites from a wide variety of places on the moon. The only trouble is we don't know where they're from. So they're very valuable samples in that they tell us about the diversity of rocks on the moon, but they're less valuable than they could be if we actually knew where they came from, because then we could take that information and apply it to some regional unit and to some regionally significant process. So context requires geological field work, and it does require to understand the context of a sample, you need to understand what unit you're really looking at. The other way to get that is to go to a very simple site where the context is so clear that a scoop of the regolith will answer your question. Now, robotic missions, in my opinion, tend to provide much less context than human field study, and I would ask people to compare the results from Luna 20, which landed in the highlands south of Crisium that I pointed out on the previous slide, to Apollo 16. Now, Apollo 16 has a lot of questions associated with it. We don't fully understand where it came from, but we do understand from Apollo 16 the context of samples that allowed us to date things like North Ray Crater, which we know fairly precisely. So, fundamentally, human field work is a significant capability above a simple grab sample scoop from a robotic mission. Now, the Apollo missions went to both Mari and Highland sites. This is a summary of the Mari sampling. Fundamentally, I would argue that from the Apollo missions, we understand the Mari geology of these four sites pretty well. We understand where that the rocks that were collected here came somewhere from the bedrock. In fact, on Apollo 11, Armstrong landed very close to a large crater that penetrated the regolith and hit the bedrock. So we're pretty confident that the bedrock here is high titanium Mari basalt on the order of 3.6 to 3.7 billion years old. Conversely, at Apollo 12, the Mari basalts here were all, the sampling was concentrated on crater rims, and these are craters that tended to excavate bedrock, and we have a very nice, good understanding that these samples represent the uppermost surface flows of that site. Now, at both 15 and 17, we not only sampled local Mari basalts, but we also sampled pyroclastic material. The pyroclastic material is evident regionally at the Apollo 17 site, but not at the Apollo 15 site. The highlands are another story. The highlands, at all four of the highland sites we went to, there were two pure highland sites, 14 and 16, and two mixed sites. Fundamentally, we have very good samples, and we have very good geologic control of those samples. But what do they represent? And I would argue, fundamentally, the only thing that there's near unanimity of agreement of in the Apollo sample collection is that the poikilitic melt rocks from Apollo 17 probably represent the melt sheet produced by the Serenitatis Basin impact. But even that, which is fairly well established, is questioned by some people in the community. And fundamental problem here is because of the complex geology of the highlands, we don't understand the context of highland samples pretty very well. Now, this results in the following two situations. I pulled these two figures from the Lunar Source Book. Now, these are diagrammatic figures, and no one takes them too seriously, nor should they. But I do think that there's quite a degree of veracity to the Apollo 12 landing site, which basically shows a series of lava flows overlying Imbrium Basin ejecta, which is on top of a pre-Imbrium Basin megaregolith. I think this is a fairly good picture of the reality of that site. Now, in contrast, the section of the Apollo 17 site is highly inferential. Yes, there is Mari basalt that floods a valley between two basin massifs, but what do these massifs consist of? And you have two highland units at the 17 site. You have both the massif material and the sculptured hills. What's the origin of these two things? The sculptured hills have been argued to be Serenitatis ejecta. The problem with that is that the sculptured hills overlie stratigraphically post-Serenitatis Basin craters. I don't think that they're related to the Serenitatis Basin. It may be Imbrium ejecta. Some of the younger ages at the site might refer to the Imbrium Basin. We just don't know that. The control is not very good. Now, I do want to point out that these problems are not necessarily completely insoluble. There is a very interesting, at one of the more complex sites, the Apollo 15 site, we actually maybe have a sample of a significant major unconformity on the moon. This is Hadley Rill. This is the orbital picture. Station 2 is right here, just on the slope of Hadley Delta, and you can see the rill basically coming from the west, trending to the north. There's a boulder that the astronauts concentrated on, the Station 2 boulder, from which 15205 was chipped. This boulder was thrown out by this crater. That's been fairly well established. If you map out the pattern of ejecta from it, this boulder was ejected by this crater, and it turns out this crater is about 2 million years old based on cosmic ray exposure ages. But here's the interesting thing about this crater. This crater occurs about 20 meters below the lip of the rim of Hadley Rill. And if you look at the cross-section of the rill as seen from the opposite side of the rill of Station 9, there's a very nice section of basalt exposed with a middle massive unit, a covered interval, and a layered unit. Now, in a paper that Gordon Swan and Ron Greeley and I wrote back in 87, we proposed that these basalt units from the 15 site are associated with these particular units. One piece of evidence for that comes from 15205, which is a fragmental breccia made up only of Apollo 15 pyroxene basalts and Apollo 15 crete basalts. Now, the pyroxene basalts are 3.3 billion years old. The crete basalts are 3.84 billion years old. So this crater happened to occur right at this contact the regolith developed on the old Apennine bench volcanic flows. So here it is possible to unravel complex stratigraphy on the moon using the sample data and the remote sensing data. So there's sort of two types of targeting, sampling targets on the moon. And I've just for convenience, I'm calling them reconnaissance and field study. A reconnaissance sample is one where a grab sample of the regolith will solve a significant scientific problem. An example here is this is the Flamsteed Ring Maria. This is one of the youngest lava flows on the moon. If you actually count the craters on this lava, it has a crater density lower than Copernicus. Now, what is that in terms of absolute age? Well, we don't know that. But a simple robotic sample return to land on this flow, grab some regolith, and return that to Earth would solve that problem. In a like manner, if you landed on the floor of Copernicus, you would likely get samples of the melt sheet of Copernicus. However, when you get into more complex sites that have multiple processes, a protracted history, and complex geology, it's much more difficult to understand what a sample return is telling you. For example, if you were to land on the Aristarchus Plateau, this is a very complex area that has Imbrium basin ejecta, it has dark red pyroclastics, it has crete basalt, it has all kinds of crete-rich intrusives. It's a very complex site that would be very hard to decipher. And just to show you that you can combine simple and complex together, these are the central peaks of Copernicus, which actually show evidence for having excavated and brought to the surface some kind of a sequence of plutonic rocks that may be genetically related. We wouldn't be able to figure that out with a simple sample return to that mission. We'd have to actually go and do field work there. So, to answer the question that I posed at the beginning, how well do we understand this record? I don't think we understand it very well at all. I think context is fairly easy to get at a Mare site where things are very clear, but when you go to the highlands, it's a very different story. There's not much outcrop. By the way, we still don't understand the origin of basin massifs, these things that surround mountains. We know that mountains on the moon are created by basins. They're formed by giant impacts. But what are the origin of these massifs? Are they piles of ejecta? Are they pieces of the sub-basement that have been uplifted and structurally emplaced? We still don't know what they are. We do know that they are good places to sample basin material because at the Apollo 17 site, the boulders that rolled down that massif was traceable to units further up in the mountain, and so they make on the highlands what I call pseudo-outcrop, basically big boulders that may represent regional units, and finally central peaks that are brought up from many kilometers depth. The final point I want to make is that remote sensing does not resolve these context issues. We now have global remote sensing data for the moon, and it applied to problems at the Apollo 14 and 16 site, they don't solve what the provenance of a lot of those samples are. So the point of this, the takeaway point is that we must better understand how the moon works on both a local and regional level to fully understand and to fully extract all the information that the lunar samples have to tell us. Thank you.
Well, we have some time if someone would like to pose a question to Paul. I see one right there.
Yeah, Brad's question is that in the earlier times, either early in Mare history or pre-Mare history, wouldn't there have been more lateral mixing? The answer is probably yes, just because you have a much higher flux. But in general, lateral mixing is not an efficient process. And I'll give you one more line of evidence for this. You see distinct compositional provinces in the highlands. And those have been laterally mixed by at basin scales, and yet they have not erased the primordial lateral heterogeneities in the crust.
Yes.
I would think that from an equipped rover like that, if you were doing sample collection along the route and then returning that to Earth, that would be roughly equivalent to sort of the Apollo 14 scale exploration of Fra Mauro, which was actually quite thorough in terms of sampling what's there. The problem is we still don't understand what we have. We don't know which of those rocks represent Imbrium ejecta and which of them are local.
Any other? Jack.
No, I appreciate that. I think that
it is
in some places, and I think the light mantle at 17 is a special case, because in actual fact that was initiated by the impacted debris at the top of the South Massif, and it formed literally a secondary ejecta blanket that lies on top of the valley floor. I didn't mean to imply that. In fact, on 15, they drove up the front of Hadley Delta, and they didn't even recognize where the Mare stopped and the highlands began. I agree, and that's exactly what's given us our understanding of the Mare sites. The problem at the Highland sites is it's not so clear-cut what you're dealing with there. You've got basically a massive deposit, a chaotic deposit. In some cases, you don't even know what the relation of the melt rocks to the clastic material is.
Well, thank you, Paul, and those that contributed through questions. So we're going to move on to our second